roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty on a Monday. Man, Goz, you know what? I do miss our time at SiriusXM when we kind of had the tunes, you know, to bring us in a little bit. Unlike your noisy phone. Just kidding. I do it too.
Wasn't? No.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No, it's kind of quiet. I guess it's calm before the storm because it is the week of Christmas. We will be here on Thursday, by the way. Just goes to show you. Goz and I haven't taken an official vacation in over a year. I'm not going to complain. We have days where we can have plenty of downtime if we front load, you know, early on or we're busy on the weekends or whatever. But I'm talking about just completely, really unplugging. The pandemic has had us just stuck at home. We hope you're all hanging in there as well. Tough times. We don't talk to you on Thursday. Wish you a Merry Christmas. It's going to be a fun show today. No guests. So if you consider that fun, maybe it won't be as much fun, but it'll be more Goz and I. We're going to unpack the UFC card that took place this past weekend, headlined by Stephen Thompson, the ultimate human, high-speed human chess player, as he defeated Jeff Neal in the main event. That one was called UFC Fight Night 183. UFC Vegas 17 was the hashtag. UFC on ESPN. Plus 41, if you're keeping track there. It's funny because it comes down to a lot of names on different fronts. But fun night of fights. And together with some college football, I really, really enjoyed my Saturday. We'll talk about that fight card. The great Jose Aldo competed as well. We'll talk about that and the rest of the card. And, of course, we'll probably goof off a little bit because it is Christmas week. And I want to give a special shout-out as well. So buckle up, Junkie Nation. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, December 21st.
Habla español, amigo.
Hola, amigos. Dani Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
Trying to get a little bit of that yogurt and granola and strawberry.
You keeping a beat over there? Or what is it?
It's still in my teeth. No, I'm trying to shake it out. But all right, here we go. Let's start off with what the fans want. They love MMA. That's what brings us together Mondays and Thursdays, and then we'll do a little goof off. Stephen Thompson goes, did what I thought he was going to do, and I'm mad at myself for not playing him. Because I know Jeff Neal's dope. He's good, man. But I've seen Thompson do this to a lot of fighters, including the great Jorge Masvidal, where they're just confused. You can either do the same thing back to him, and that's basically counter, be patient, pick your spots, not give him, you know, those openings, which is kind of what Darren Till did. Or what Tyron Woodley did as well, but it won't be a pleasing fight. In fact, this one wasn't a pleasing fight. I guess Neal did try a little bit of that now that I think about it, but he had the smaller cage to work with, so that's why I thought, Thompson, I noticed when he weighed in, even though he had his he had his hair did. You could still see some grays, and I was like, I wonder if this is one of those cats that's just gonna maybe age before our eyes, and Neil's gonna go in there and clobber him, because I love Neil's power and his aggression. Those clean shots just weren't there, and in the smaller cage, it surprised me. He looked frustrated when I was reading his face. Same thing. He just looked like somebody who wanted the fight to end, go back to the drawing board, and then just see if he could do it again down the road, which is something a lot of people are saying. Boy, I'd love to see him and Masvidal again. You know, Masvidal found that aggression. He said he will never let that happen again. But what did you think of that 5-round dominant performance by Stephen Thompson, which I took my hat to, by the way?
I don't think it's one of those performances. I don't think we were set up to see one of those performances where Stephen ages overnight. I think he has a little bit over the past and has proven that, you know, maybe he's slowed down a little bit. A little combination of that and a little combination of, I think people have also figured out not to play his game, and they've forced him to fight differently, which is what I thought Jeff Neal was going to try and do. But props to Stephen as far as game plans go, and he picked up on it right away. Jeff was going to do what Stephen wanted him to do that fight, and Jeff never did any adjustments to that. He basically followed Stephen around. Stephen would stop, pivot, hit him with a shot, get out. Like, he had real good ring generalship. He knew where he was. It was just kind of vintage Stephen Thompson. I don't know if it answered a lot of questions, though, because we've seen him do that, and it you know, it doesn't take a young fella to have that type of game plan. We see Lyoto Machida did that late into his career, right? So it's tough to see what we have with Stephen Thompson right now, but one thing that I think we're sure of is that he'll still give people problems. He's still a formidable guy. And one thing
that he's got a desire to do it too. Did you notice? He says he wants to go for the title, and that's where I felt he was lacking a little bit. So I agree with what you're saying. Like, that's the frame, the mind frame, I think, of the fighter that not only physically shows it, but mentally shows you as well. I mean, continue. I jumped in there, but finish what you're saying about Thompson.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing because our dog slept in today, and he just woke up, and he just walked out of your room and kind of walked into the studio. But he had that look where his eyes are barely open. Like, if he could with his paws, he'd be wiping crust out of his eyes and doing this right now. I thought what was cool about this card was there was, I think, two cards ago where you had, even one card ago, where you had some of that old guard just being taken out by the younger, fresher fighter. This card was a little bit of that reverse, where some of the older cats kind of held their ground they didn't put over some of the younger talent. But with Stephen Thompson, I don't know that we can really judge him very much off of that performance. There's still more to be seen, but he's still a tough cat. And Jeff Neal, I think when he goes back, he's going to watch it and he's going to go, damn, I could have done better. That's the problem. But every fighter has probably had that moment at some point in their career.
Yeah, Thompson is just needs to accept that's what I am. I wait for you to make mistakes, and then I capitalize. I mean, he has the power to put you down, but his best weapons are his unpredictability and the fact that he just moves really good. He's not a sitting target, and he can hit you with either hand, and he doesn't have to be planted. He can be off balance, and he can mix it up with his hands and his feet. His karate style is just really, really nice, man. He does it great. Just a kick to the body works just as good as a jab, you know, to the nose. And so he was doing all that. He kept frustrating Jeff Neal. And I didn't think it would be like 50-45. I think I got the scores right here. Yeah, was it 350-45. I mean, I thought like 49-46, 48-47. I'm like I said, I think a lot of Jeff Neal. God bless him. He's been through a lot. I mean, if you don't know his story, he feels like he could have died a few months ago with the sepsis that he had. Correct? That's what he had, right?
Yeah, and it's in his leg, you know, and it got King Mo went through something kind of similar where he could have lost his leg, and it got really, really bad, man. And so adversity is nothing new for Jeff Neal. And I think he's the type of guy that just maybe ran into a lesson live on TV. That's what sucks, you know, in the UFC. He learned a lesson live in front of millions of people, and on the grandest stage as the main event. That part sucks, but he seems like the type of fighter that will probably make that correction and come back. And I'm one of those guys that hates to say, you know, losing could have been the best thing. And he'll learn from this mistake. And it did teach him a lesson. And I think he'll be back.
Yeah. And like I said, I love Thompson's mentality of saying he's not done. He wants to go for the title. Because I think, can he do that to Usman in a big 30-foot octagon? Possibly. Again, that movement, man, it's something else. You know, you have to be willing to be booed and to, you know, not have maybe that carnal moment that I always talk about where, you know, you do knock someone out or you submit them or you pummel them. You just have to basically be patient and slowly defeat them over time. And if you find your opening, great, you know, you do it. But he is a really, really tough puzzle to solve. And plus, Stephen Thompson doesn't, he's not trying to tell you, yo, man, I'm a pimp, check all this bling out or anything. I'm cool on all fronts. No, he's telling you, look, I'm a pretty good karate guy with a bunch of other skills to complement my MMA game. Oh, and Monday through Friday, I drive a school bus. You know, like, he's not trying to, like, you know, really portray anything other than he's a respectful professional, you know. And every once in a while, if you poke him in enough, you might get him to say ass instead of butt. Yeah, I'm going to kick his ass, you know, whatever. But he's really, truly a nice guy. That's that. He moves on. Jeff Neal takes a step back. You know, that welterweight division is just like the lightweights, probably the bantamweights, where that loss will probably be a setback of at least 18 months to 2 years to be right back where he's at right now. Because had he beaten Thompson, man, we're taking him very, very seriously. You know what I mean? Kind of almost where Leon Edwards was about a year back, where they were saying, do you want a shot at the title? You know what I mean? Masvidal doesn't want it. Do you want it? And then he couldn't do it. And so along the way, we eventually got to Gilbert Burns, who was streaking hot. But, yeah, that's where, you know, Neil could be, I guess, had he beaten somebody like Wonderboy. You had to beat Wonderboy or Damian Maya or one of those guys, or maybe even Colby. Colby's kind of been right up there as well. He made it all the way to interim champ. But you got to take out one of those tough puzzles, you know. So we'll see. If he can stay busy and get somebody else, you know, coming off a loss or something like that, then maybe he'll do it quicker. Maybe it's a little quicker if you stay active.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been a good one for him for sure, but he's talented. He'll be back.
In the co-main event, Jose Aldo defeated Marlon Vera. 29-28 across the board. That's my bad. And man, Aldo goes, you know, I started thinking back. It's not like he stunk it up against Moraes. That was his first time back to 135. And he deteriorated as the fight went on. And credit to Marlon. I mean, it was damage and it was being tired. Against Peter Yan, there was one round of brilliance. But I got to give more credit to Peter Yan, which is damn good. But in this fight, boy, did Aldo just look good, man. When you take a liver shot and then a kick to the leg, and before you even say, ow, both of those things have occurred, that guy still has his speed. He has his technique. He looked good. And then I really love the outpouring of support for Jose as well. Because, like you said, goes earlier, some of the veterans haven't had a nice run in 2020 or 2020. You know what I mean? Where some are no longer with the organization, or some are down to their last fight, or like Pettis. He's now a free agent. Is he coming back? Is he not? No. Aldo, for sure, is now in a pretty good spot at bantamweight.
Yeah, that was a really good performance for him, mostly because I feel like he used all his weapons for once. You know, this dude has some of the scariest weapons in the game, and he used them all in this fight, and he did it from the get-go. So I think he never really gave Marlon Vera a chance to get off and to do anything that Marlon wanted to do. Marlon really, I mean, I think he summed it up, but he just kind of looked flat. It didn't look like the same kind of Marlon that we've seen. Some Marlon, what do I keep saying? Oh, yeah, Marlon. I don't know why sometimes fighters just come out and they don't do anything. In this case, I don't know what happened to him, but he just looked very, very not there, very flat, very confused. I think it was a little bit of that combined with the fact that Jose Aldo just looked tremendous. And Jose Aldo used every tool in the toolbox. And I think that's what he has to do. He used to overwhelm fighters. That's what would get fighters in trouble, is they couldn't believe all these different areas where the attack was coming from. It was too much. And so what would happen is fighters would backpedal, and they spent most of the round trying to defend these strikes coming from every direction, and they would forget to have any offense themselves. He did that. Jose Aldo brought that back in this fight. And if he can fight like that every fight, then dude, that dude's a menace.
Big time. And how about the fact that, did he kind of remind you what he did to Mike Brown? Do you remember when he got on top of Mike Brown and then when he finished him? Now, they were already on the ground, but he interlocked his legs and just, I remember asking Mike Brown, he said, I felt like I was locked in there, you know what I mean? And he basically, at that moment, I knew that my time was done. And when he took the back of Marlon Vera in the third round, he kind of did it. He was almost too high, and I thought he was going to slip off. But I think his legs are so strong and his balance is so great, which, by the way, that's why he was so difficult to take down. Chad Mendes, I mean, had some really, really nice attempts at a takedown, but Aldo was able to keep his balance one way or another. But anyway, he's on his back, and then he was able to still reposition himself, because that could have been a costly move too, you know what I mean? But Aldo's all-around game, I mean, we just don't talk about much about his ground game. When it needs to be on, it can be on. It's not world class. It's not like he's a submission machine, but it can be effective. There you go. That's the word.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I hope he fights. I mean, that's the problem with Jose Aldo, though, is like nobody says that he lacks talent. It's more of a mental thing, that where, you know, he went through not wanting to throw that kick for a long time. Now he's starting to throw it a little bit. But really, when he does use every tool that he has, he is very, very tough. And that's something that I think can go on even a year from now, 2 years from now. The one thing that I haven't seen him slow down on that I thought we would by now is speed. He seems just as quick.
Him and Masvidal dig that body, that shot to the body, so beautifully, because it's accurate the way they dip down. They get a lot of power, you know, their whole body, and then obviously the way they turn. But then they retract it really fast as well. You know, they have a good motion with the left hand, boom, still making sure to cover up, pull back, and then Aldo will add that little leg kick that you won't see Masvidal do that, you know. I'm telling you, man, I remember just seeing it going, wow, like, whoa. I mean, this dude is something else. He really is. Now, that's not going to win you every single fight. You still got to wrestle. You still got to break cardio over 5 minutes. You still got to take damage well. I mean, Peter Yan really put it on Jose Aldo. But see, that's where we thought, oh, I get it. Marlon chopped him down. Yan took a few more bites out of the tree, and now it's just a matter of somebody finish him off, and then that tree is going to topple. And what does this mean? That means his career is over. He's out of the UFC. He's going back to 45. You know, he's going to take some time. I don't know. It could be a lot of things. With Silva, Anderson, they still say he may fight, but 45, and we know he's not fighting in the UFC. With Romero, that seemed to be more of a contract dispute, but, you know, the UFC was offering some fights. Romero wanted others, so I think this represented being a contender. And then with Pettis, I mean, he won, and he says he's going back down to 155, so this might just mean you got to fight people like Alex, you know, you got to continue to fight Alex Morano. He won. I guess maybe I shouldn't use the example. Nobody really topped at the tree. So he held his ground. Jose Aldo held his ground. Jacare, that could mean out of the UFC. I don't know. I don't think he's going to retire, but it could mean he's maybe out of the UFC. So there's, you know, every case different in the way you apply it. But I guess if Thompson had lost, he probably would stay with the organization, but he'd probably not be a contender. So, anyway, congrats to Jose Aldo. He defeats Marlon Vera. I felt gutted for Vergos. I feel like we've gotten to know him pretty good. We've had about a good 5 interviews with him in the past 2 years, mostly coming off a win. So, yeah, I mean, we've kind of seen a rise. Something similar like we did with Brandon Moreno. You know, and then they take this difficult loss. Now, for Moreno, it was a draw in a world title attempt. For Marlon Vera, this was his chance to really get over and be possibly a either 5 to 10 guy or maybe a top 5 guy, depending on what rankings you look at. I think I would classify him more 5 to 10 if we're talking USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie, had he beaten Aldo. But he didn't, so let's see how he knocks himself off and pick himself up. Go ahead.
I'm just worried for you. Is he going to blame the loss on you? I mean, you set up the fight.
Well, I thought he was going to take a chop that tree down, continue it, you know?
Uh-huh. He might have to take that out on you.
What? Hey, man, I mean, I got him the moment. That's all I can do. You can lead the horse to water. It's up to him if he wants to drink or not.
Uh-huh.
I like that guy, but I can't deny that I was a huge Jose Aldo fan, especially in the WEC and early UFC. And then I got a little bored with him, which I do with most athletes, unless they're for an official team of mine, we'll say. When they, I don't know, a lot of them become your heroes in a way, especially growing up. Because they could do what you can't do. They enjoy the lifestyle that you sometimes wish you had or whatever. And when it seems like they take it for granted, don't enjoy it. Like, I think Aldo didn't enjoy it. You know, luckily McGregor came along for him to get a nice payday. But, man, those 13 seconds took a lot out of him. It was a big buildup. I don't think he thought he was going to lose, much less lose in 13 seconds. But, I don't know. I've always been a little disappointed that he didn't make a better effort to learn English. Or they say that movie was huge for him in Brazil. Maybe he was just cool with being an icon in Brazil. But, like, for example, Vanderlei, Verdum, they took other steps, similar to what soccer players do. You grow up, let's say, in Argentina or Peru or Colombia or wherever, you become pretty damn good where you outgrow the size the domestic league, so you go to Europe and play for some of the bigger teams that pay more, you know. You do about a 10-year run. That's usually where you meet your wife, have a couple kids, you learn that language, you put them in great schools, and then what happens? The later part of your career, you come back and then, you know, close up shop in your native soil. That's not – I'm not saying that's the perfect blueprint or the only blueprint, but that's one I'm familiar with in soccer. And I saw it with Vanderlei, who now lives in Brazil. I don't know if he'll ever go back. But I see kind of a similar blueprint with MMA athletes who could possibly do something like that, you know what I mean? And take advantage of the PI, immerse yourself in American wrestling, you know what I mean? But it seemed like he wanted to always stay in those little cozy confines. It worked. I mean, 9 title defenses is respectable. For Conor, he was no longer the same.
I just remember when Josh Barnett was in Pride and hearing him speak in Japanese to the crowd and all that. I thought that was cool. So for me, I can't imagine what the Japanese crowd would have thought. You know, this American, he's shouting us out in our language. That's very cool to me.
That's the perfect example, goes Josh Barnett talking in Japanese, soaking it up. And doing it. Now, there's going to be a lot of people that listen and go, hey, look, it's just not in some of us. Some of us like to punch the clock and go home. Yeah, I guess I get that too. You know what I mean? But I remember Aldo complaining at press conferences that he wanted more money. He wanted more respect. He wasn't getting a lot of what he thought he deserved. But he also, to me, I wasn't putting the best effort forward. All right, we got a last-minute surprise. One of my favorites in the sport of mixed martial arts. We didn't promote on the show that we were going to have a guest today, but I had this little feeling. Remember, I like to play games with this cat. I kind of tricked him last time into being on the show. He should have been at practice. Well, this time, he's actually in an isolated state, unfortunately, but we're going to check up on him, see how he's doing, maybe take his mind off it all, and we're going to talk to Bilal Muhammad. Hang on, one of the top welterweights in the world.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. featuring For the Wind's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine. And
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter. Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're going to be talking to Bilal Muhammad. He's joining us here on the program. He was scheduled to fight this past weekend. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. He's going to fight in early 2021. And like I stated, one of the top welterweights in the world. That's one of the most stacked divisions in the world. What's up, Bully? How are you?
What's up, bro? How you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. But more importantly, how are you doing?
I feel like I went past the worst of it so far. I just got like a lingering cough now. So I'm hoping within the next couple of days it'll be gone. Then I can get back to work.
Yeah, man. Well, you have the benefit of being an exceptional athlete, you know, in great shape. And so I think for a lot of you, sometimes it can come easier. But we can't take it for granted because a lot of athletes that I follow in other sports have said, oh, man, this thing can do a number on you. You know what I mean? So we wish you the mildest of symptoms. And I'm glad you're past the worst and hopefully a quick recovery so you can get back to doing what you do. And that's not only entertaining in the octagon, but outside the octagon.
Yeah, man. I was sitting there like hoping and praying that this wouldn't happen. You know, you're sitting there and all I got is one week left. Now it's about to be fight week. There's no way something stupid like this could happen. Then you're sitting there the week before my fight, three fights got canceled. Then you're like, all right, I'm not going out. I'm not seeing nobody. I don't even want to see my family right now. I don't want to take no chances right now. Then all of a sudden, literally the Sunday night, like probably like around 4 a.m. I literally woke up just shivering. I was like, nah, you're kidding me. I was supposed to go to Vegas on Tuesday. And I'm like, nah, this can't be happening right now. So I woke up like shivering. And then I hit up Ali and I'm like, do you think they can give me a quick COVID test? Because I don't want to come to Vegas and they have to make me drive home because they're not going to let me fly. And he's like, no, brother, if you're sick, we're pulling you out. I said, I'm not pulling out if I'm just sick. If it's not COVID, I'm still fighting. And then I ended up finding like a spot in Chicago that did one of them rapid tests. It was like $200. And then I was like, I already knew something was wrong just because I never felt sick like that before. So I was just like random shivers. And then I came back positive and I was like, all right.
Hey, Bully,
it would have happened the worst week.
You would have fought with a common cold, like a brutal cold or the flu. You would have done it if it wasn't Rona?
Yeah, if it wasn't Rona, I'm fighting.
Wow. Just seems like I was just giving the example of Jeff Neal losing to Stephen Thompson is about a setback of 18 months to 2 years to get back to where he's at because you guys are such a stacked division. You know what I mean? I don't mean it in any way to like, you know, you fucked up. I'm not trying to say that, but I'm saying the reality. Like if he beats Thompson, now he's in a really, really good spot because Thompson, Maya, those guys are those traditional tough outs that you got to get to before you get to Usman or back then Woodley or whatever, you know what I mean? And so you know, he learned a lesson. He's going to come back. He's a great welterweight. I'm sure he'll be back. But I pose the same thing to you. You're going in there, and if you're not at 100% in a tough division, I mean, I know I get it. This is the way you get paid and all that. You want to release the, you know, the rage from a training camp and weight and all that. But at the same time, maybe I'm hearing what Ali's saying. If you're not 100, man, I mean, oof, that's ballsy.
Yeah, I know that's like his mindset. But to me, my mindset, I think I could beat anybody no matter what. So it's not like I have the mindset, all right, I'm not going to sit there and pull out because of a cold. So, and like even right now, like I'm more pissed off now that I'm like, did I literally just pull out of a fight because I'm feeling sick? Like, I don't know. It just gives me like a soft mentality. But, yeah, like I understand what you're saying. I literally – Jeff Neal is the one who literally put me back 2 years. I'm the one that was my last loss. And then I finally just got into the rankings 3 years later. So it's like I had to sit there and bounce back. And like I said, I think Jeff could bounce back. Wonderboy is one of those tough fights. Now you know why a lot of these guys were afraid to fight him. Leon Edwards willing to fight a guy number 15 instead of a guy that's right underneath him at number 4 or 5, just because his style is so weird to fight. And you're gonna have to catch Wonderboy or have freaking really good dominant wrestling to beat him. You're not gonna beat him striking him strike for strike, blow for blow. He's one of those guys. You can't do that with that type of guy.
Yeah, I was just saying you should be prepared to be booed, man, because you're going to have to basically outpatient the patient counter striker. It would help to get him in the smaller cage. That's why I thought Jeff Neal might have a little bit more luck. And honestly, I thought there was times where he could have pulled the trigger and didn't. But I'm sorry, go ahead. What were you going to chime in on?
Well, I was going to ask him, Bilal, like a lot of us have an idea, those who haven't gotten this, what it could maybe be like based off of what other people have gone through, but it's been so different for everyone. In your mind, when it started, is it worse than what you imagined, or is it less, or is it kind of on par from what you thought maybe could possibly happen to your body?
For me, I'm getting people tell me, oh, you lose taste and smell. I'm like, all right, well, you know, taste and smell is not going to scare me. It was a lot worse than what I expected. I thought it was going to be something small, but I was like, literally, I'm telling you, I was like just literally shivering in my bed, and I was like in sweats, and I'm sitting there got my freaking winter jacket on, put my jacket on, and I'm still shivering underneath my jacket. I'm like, what the heck is going on? And it's coming off of feeling the best I've ever felt in my life. I'm like literally like 2 weeks out, a week out from a fight, and like I haven't even started really cutting hard yet. So it's like my body, I feel in the best shape ever. I feel in great shape. Literally that Sunday I did 20 mile bike ride, so like I felt like great, and then literally with just like a little snap of a finger I woke up, my body just freaking felt broken down. Now I wear like this whoop thing right here, and it like tells you how much your body recovers and like how much you burn in a day, and like it'll tell me like, all right, your body recovered 90%, so you could go a lot harder today, work out harder today, or take it easy today. And then literally for like the last 4 days, it would just kept telling me 1% recovery, 1% recovery, 1% recovery. Like, and it never tells me 1% recovery ever. So that's why I was like, all right, well, now I know for sure there's nothing wrong with me.
You know, a lot of fighters, when if they come back from an injury, they have certain tests for them. You know, that big day in jiu-jitsu, that's going to tell me where I'm at with this knee, you know, those sort of things. For you, when you step back into a gym, is there anything, any sort of workout or anything that you're going to put yourself through that it would be a good indication of where you're at coming back now?
The biggest thing now is I think Ali's been dealing with a lot of his guys that have had it before, where a lot of them are having like real bad side effects from the COVID after they go back to training hard. So he's telling me just to take it a lot slower and then even go get x-rayed, because he said some of these guys are getting like blood clots and stuff like that. So he said, just to be careful. So like for me, I'm just gonna probably go on a start off small with like a biking and jogging, just to see how I feel. Lighter, lighter, lighter. Pick it up that way instead of going harder to grappling or harder to rolling or anything like that. Because I don't want to sit there and I don't want to have any more setbacks. So I'm gonna take it super slow and take it day by day. See how my body feels from like light jogging and then maybe hitting the bag. And then going from there, and then hopefully get a quick once I know that I'm good to go, then I'll get my fight scheduled.
What's been the best distraction for you? And I'll give you an example. There are days where George and I, maybe we feel like shit, but we watch your show and we crack up. It's a good distraction. It kind of puts you in a different mindset. For you, what's been the best distraction? Have you seen any good movies, any good TV shows? Is there anybody that makes you laugh?
I literally was just I rewatched the whole Game of Thrones again. Within like 2 days, I was just literally watched all 7 seasons again. So now it's just basically just trying to find another show. I was trying to get into, literally, I was sitting there up to like 2 a.m. just watching it.
God damn.
What kind of a show are you looking for?
I'm looking for anything that gets me into it, like something that's going to get me wanting to keep watching, wanting to keep looking into it.
Get him, those.
All right, we got a bunch of them. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Do you have Amazon Prime?
Yeah, I got Amazon Prime.
Go to your bread and butter. It was like you did with Abby, I think.
My bread and butter?
A little old school, yeah.
Well, you're talking about movies or shows, George?
Shows.
I kind of like 000. I had George watch that, and I thought he was pretty dope. It's about a drug deal from three perspectives: the buyer, the shipper, and the purchaser. Italian, Mexican, American. So it's in different languages. But it's pretty dope, man, and the whole story intertwines.
It's and a show? Then,
it's a show, yeah. Not a lot of people know.
And then I would say, it looked like Ghost was there for a second. I think the other one is back in the early 2000s, there was a show called The Shield on FX, and it was about 30 cops in LA, basically. But it's one of those that after the first episode, you'll be like, I'm hooked. I'm in. You can't wait for that. I think you could blow through a whole season. Yeah. So we did that to our videographer, Abby, from the UK. He was in the hospital. He was bored and goes through The Shield at him. And I was like, Shield? Are you, going, are you sure? I mean, The Shield was dope, but, you know, it was 20 years ago. And then Ghost goes, hey, let's watch the first episode again. I remember going, oh, that's why I was hooked back then. It was awesome. And the good thing there is if you really love it, it's like seasons, so you can, you know, take it slow. But I think you can blow through one season pretty quick, and I think you'd be in.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I'll tell you this, dude. Okay. In our career, you know, you have your certain coaches, like a Mike Dolce, that you know you're going to hit your weight if you hire him. George and I are experts in A, putting on weight. We could be that kind of coach. And two, television and movies. We got you, dog. We got you.
We have free credit when it comes to suggesting movies and shows. And by the way, I'm glad you're smiling, because the first 10 minutes you weren't smiling when you were telling us about the Rona. I was like, oh, this ain't the same bully. I'm always smiling, laughing, and goofing. And I was like, man, maybe I hit him up on the wrong day. But yeah, you're smiling now.
No, yeah, we're good. You know,
those shivers, man, you said parka, you were really, really like loaded up and you just felt really, really cold. What was another symptom that you had, or can you share side effect, or is it maybe something you want to keep to yourself?
No, I can share. I don't. Yeah, that's the thing. That's I'm like, I like to keep telling me, like, yeah, this guy had it, this guy had it. So just be careful with it. And I'm like, that's when it starts getting scary. But yeah, the biggest thing was the chills, and then I had really bad body aches. Like my literally just woke up, like felt like I was like basically in a fight, and I wasn't basically doing nothing. So the body aches are really bad, the chills, and then basically now it's just basically like mucus and coughing. So I have a lot of doctor friends, and all of them are telling me just like, don't even take cough medicine. Your body wants to cough it out. So basically just trying to get rid of it, keep coughing, let it come out. And then, you know, hopefully it'll be freaking gone. So, you know, I got my mom's, she lives like down the street. So like literally every couple hours, she'll sit there and make me a big pot of soup, a lot of food. That's the biggest thing too. Like a lot of people say they lost their taste and smell. I still have both of those. So, and then I'm sitting there coming off of dieting. So my mom's sitting there making me a whole bunch of food now that I could eat. And she'll just like leave it on the porch and leave.
Yeah, man. Moms are the best. Shout out to your mom. But I gotta tell you something. I'm only going to tell you this because you already told us you're past the worst, and because you're pretty strong-minded. Otherwise, you wouldn't be a professional fighter, man. You guys are nuts. But not having taste and smell might not necessarily be a good thing. I heard the ones that get the taste and smell have actually the easier bouts. So I'm not telling you that that's 100% locked or whatever. But, yeah, follow Ali's advice. For sure, check on the blood clots. Ricardo Lamas, fellow Chicago guy like you, told us that when he was in Uruguay after a fight, his calf tightened up, and he had a blood clot. And it was scary because, you know, some of those embolisms can be fatal. So for sure, look after yourself, especially when they talk about blood clots. That's a really, really serious thing. I can't emphasize that enough. But, you're a top, you know, professional athlete, man. You know, you're going to be all right, bro.
Appreciate you guys, man.
Yeah. It's probably too early to just say, oh yeah, early 2021, right? I mean, I'm sure that's what you would like, but
I was sitting there thinking right away, like, yeah, put me on the January 16th card. Put me on the January 16th card. Mm-hmm. Like right when that first happened. And then I saw that after that first like 3 or 4 days, I'm like, all right, hold on. Let me see how I feel after a week. All right, let me see how I feel after 2 weeks. So now I'm hoping. I don't even want to say what I'm hoping, but we'll see how it feels how I, when I'm back to training. Because, like you said, I don't know how long it's gonna last.
So you've been alone for how many days now? A week?
Yeah, it's been about 9 days now.
Wow. I mean, you might have to spend Christmas alone as well.
I don't celebrate Christmas anyway, so it's just like.
No, that's true. Yeah. All right. So yeah, I mean, you're talking about your mom, and these are the holidays. So I just was wondering, I guess, what would be next for you? You know.
No, that's like honestly, that was the biggest thing I was scared about, just because, like I said, I go to their house a lot, so it's just like hoping that I didn't pass it to them or my dad over there. So it's just, that was the scariest part. Like I don't really care about myself, but as long as one of them didn't catch it, I'm good.
Have they been tested?
Yeah, they both got tested.
Negative?
Yeah.
Good. That's really good. Yeah. Wow. All right, man. Are you feeling okay at this moment, or are you in a shitty stage right now, like physically?
No, I'm good. Now it's just basically to the point where I feel okay enough to start moving and stuff like that, but I still have that. I still have like a cough. So it's like, I don't want to do anything yet. So it's like where my body feels okay, but then the doctors are telling me like, no, I'll give it full 2 weeks, give it full 2 weeks, give it full 2 weeks. So it's like, maybe I'll go for a walk around the block or something like that.
Do you, can you trace it back to when you pretty sure you got it?
Well, what's, the only thing that we have is what, my teammate got it too, Yair. And he says this is pretty bad. So, like, he messaged me saying that he feels, like super bad. And we were, like, training, like, that day. Because, like, that Wednesday last week, I got tested from the UFC. They sent us an in-home test. And I passed that test. So that's why it really didn't make sense. So it had to be something past Wednesday or, like, you never know with this thing anyway. But, like, I know that he said that he got it. And he said he got it bad. So it had to be something inside the gym.
Let me tell you one more thing. Do you have any more questions, Goz? Are you good?
I got one more.
Okay, well, let me tell him this, and then we'll finish with Goz. And I hope I'm not stepping over the line here in any way, but I want to look out for you guys. Brendan Schaub, when he got the Rona, he went out in public, and he got a lot of flack for it. So you're a high-profile athlete. You never know who's watching. You talked about the walk around the block. Maybe hold back, or if you do, hoodie and glasses. Because there's like this quarantine period, and if some goof sees you, I shouldn't even say that because they'd probably just be doing their job or whatever, but just kind of be careful with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, of course. Yeah. That was the biggest thing too. Cause a lot of my teammates were like, oh, just fly to Vegas anyway, fly to Vegas. What if the test is false positive? And I'm like, dude, I feel like crap and I don't want to sit there and get on a plane knowing that I may have, Rona. The test came back positive with it. And like, oh, what if you go down there? Maybe they'll still cut you a check or something like that. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to get on a plane no matter what. So that's just like the stupidest thing. I'm not going to sit there and knowing that I have it being grimy enough to sit on a plane with a bunch of people and then pass it along to somebody else. But yeah, maybe you're right. I got a treadmill in the garage anyway. I walk in like a treadmill.
Hey, Bully, did you ever play Mike Tyson's Punch Out growing up?
No.
All right. Well, in that video game, every character was different in some way. They had some special type of ability, right? Your division, I want to talk about your division. It reminds me of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. No fighter is similar in that division. Like, every guy has this unique skill set to him. It's a nightmare of a division that I don't think gets enough credit. Where do you stack your division compared to others? And what are some of those things that stand out about the fighters that are either above you or below you in your division?
I feel like our division probably has like maybe us and the 35ers, I feel like probably have the tightest division, where I feel like anybody in that top 15 can beat anybody at any time. It's all about the right timing and just random stuff could literally happen in a fight. Like even with the Jeff Neal fight, where he says he couldn't even see out of his left eye from a headbutt. And I feel like those little things can all change. Like that headbutt could have cut Wonderboy's eye, and who knows where that fight would have went from there. Or if Wonderboy got hurt his knee a little earlier, who knows where Jeff Neal would have been. Because Jeff Neal started landing stuff, fought, a lot of punches and stuff at the end when Wonderboy couldn't move. And I feel like with guys in the division, everybody's tough enough to beat anybody on any given night. And I feel like you're going to – I don't think that the belt's gonna be moving hands a lot, because I mean the Bellator champ's not fighting a lot, but I feel like you're gonna see a lot of numbers changing within the next year, where a lot of guys are gonna be bouncing up and down a lot on that in the rankings.
You're one of the most chill guys I know. Could you ever have on Remember the Show somebody that you're gonna fight? Like, fight's already been signed. Could they ever show up on your show? Would that ever would you be able to get past it?
Yeah, I would love that. Like, I don't sit there. I don't have to hate anybody to fight them. Like, I had Neil Magny on the show, and Jason Anik literally asked him, like, "Hey, wait, I have two welterweights right here. You guys could end up fighting each other one day." And we just kept it professional. Like, to me, it's not nothing serious. Like even when I'm making fun of guys on social media, it's all literally fun. So it's like you never see me say anything outlandish or really disrespect somebody. Everything's just out of fun and games for me, and I just like making it entertaining. So I could have whoever I'm gonna fight on the show easily.
Bully, by the way, are you gonna revisit you versus Brady, or will it still stay you versus, or you know, are you looking for another name or Lima, or no, what do you think is gonna happen now?
I mean, it all depends on basically if Lima wants to wait or not. I think Brady, he got another fight signed, okay. Signed up already. So it's like the only thing for me is just like, this thing pushed me back a little bit, just because if I do end up having to fight Lima again, like, I have a set of plan where it's like, all right, I beat Lima, then it's all right. Now I finally get a ranked guy. I got my number now. He came up. Basically, got lucky because he got a ranked opponent now. That it took me forever to get a ranked opponent. So, like, he got a ranked opponent. So, it's like, it's all on him if he wants to wait and wait for me to get healthy and fight me. Because, I mean, like, your goal is to be in the rankings. So, like, if he wants to wait for me, that's a ranked guy. So, why not wait for me? But if he doesn't, then cool. Like, I don't really care. Like, I didn't have nothing personal or anything against him. I just want a name. I want somebody to fight, and I want to move up that ladder. The goal is to keep moving up the ladder. And then, so like for me, the only thing that's heartbreaking is that I would have fought him if I would have beat him. Then my next fight for sure would have been against a ranked guy. So it's now it's like, let's see what the UFC gives me now, what they're thinking now. But if it's going to be Lima again, I was already trained for him. So hopefully that would be a lot easier if we could just do that and then pop that up in February real quick.
So follow Bilal Muhammad on Twitter at BullyB170. Not only will you get some of the best picks on fight night so that you can make some money, he's not even a tout. He's just somebody that loves fighting or is good at fighting and is good at picking fights. So check that out. And then also you'll see the links to the show he does on Thursdays with John Anik's twin, Jason Anik, or I'm sure Jason Anik would prefer I say he's got a twin and it's John Anik. it's called Remember the Show, where they welcome fighters and notables and have a real good time on Thursdays on YouTube. So check it out again at BullyB170. Most importantly, Bully, thanks for popping in randomly here. Hopefully we took your mind off, you know, what you're going through for 20 minutes. And I'm glad you're past the worst. And we just hope for a speedy recovery all the way back to 100%.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it, man. Now I just got to figure out something else to do for the next 8 hours.
The Shield, dog.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna check that out. The Shield, and you said 000?
000.
And okay. Yellowstone. Yellowstone's legit too.
I heard about Yellowstone, but I don't know. I'm not a Kevin Costner guy.
Not a Kevin Costner guy?
Yeah, I don't know.
What did you ever see The Untouchables? The Untouchables is based in Chicago. Did you ever see Kevin Costner in The Untouchables?
No.
Dude, these young guys, man. this is a Robert De Niro mafia movie. It's based on Al Capone. Oh. You will like it. It's got Andy Garcia, Robert De Niro, Kevin Costner, and a few others, Sean Connery. You will love it. 1634 Racine. That's where one of the guys lived there in Chicago. Actually, when I went to Chicago, the one time I went, I go, take me to 1634 Racine. I just wanted to see anything like the set. But anyway, yeah, check that out. There's another movie based in Chicago, too. And goes, I meant to tell you, I watched it the other day, and I could have sworn they said the same address, 1634 Racine. But it's called Bad Boys. And it's not Martin Lawrence and Will Smith. Oh. It's with Sean Penn back in the early 80s, but it's based in Chicago as well. So you know, if you like the more modern stuff, then just mute me. But if you kind of don't mind going back a little bit, that's two gems for you right there. Bad Boys and The Untouchables, both in the 80s, and then The Shield for your series. Trust me, you'll thank me later if you watch it.
For sure.
All right, later, boy. Take care.
Peace, guys.
Yeah, it looked cool. Like you thought Ben-Hur was going to be our next one.
Yeah, really. Hey, but no, Goose, you co-sign on those, right? It's not I'm on a cliff.
They're good movies. What you and I have to be cognizant of is, do they kind of transfer to today? So, like, we love the Warriors. Anybody who watches the Warriors now might probably go, hey, that's goofy. But it's still a unique story. And it was fun. I think you could still have fun watching it. Bad Boys, I mean, all that can happen today. So I don't see why anybody wouldn't like that. And what was the other one? Oh, Untouchables is awesome. It's based off of history. So, I mean, can't argue with that.
Yeah, Al Capone. Yeah. And those two, I only threw the bonus, which was Bad Boys, the original with Sean Penn. Isai Morales is in that as well. I only threw that because Chicago. Because I remember hearing them say, I think they asked Sean Penn, where do you live? And he said, I could have sworn he said 1634 Racine. I go, wait a minute. Is he goofing? Or is that a real address? Or is that something that's prominent in Chicago? Because I could have sworn that's what was on the match on Sean Connery's address, 1634 Racine or something like that. So I thought that's just too big of a coincidence. So I'm going to have to go back and see if he said exactly the same address as on the show. And The Untouchables. And I don't know if he's a famous actor or not, but his name was Lofgren in Bad Boys. So when I say Isai Morales, Ali Sheedy, Sean Penn, those are three decent names. Sean Penn's Academy Award winner. But the guy that plays the captain of the guards in Shawshank, you'll see him in a role about 10, 12 years earlier. So he's in that movie as well.
I thought for sure you were going to throw out River Monsters. I heard this week they're going to let you know about the Gozy.
The River Monsters. Yeah, River Monsters with Jeremy Wade. Yeah, as he travels the world to look for – dude, that guy's ruined it for me a little bit. Like, when I used to go to it was called Dale Hollow Lake in Tennessee, I jumped in like there was no problem, right? I used to be a pretty good swimmer. I doubt I am still. I mean, I can swim, but I went in without a life vest because the boat was right there. I could swim, and I think other swimmers were there. But then you hear about some of the fatalities, like at Lake Mead, or even a guy named, I think his name was Gilbert, not Arenas, but Gilbert. Oh, remember, he was a UFC fighter?
Havasu, right?
Anaya, something like that. He was a UFC fighter. He drowned in the early 2000s and the mid 2000s as well. It was in Arizona. He passed away. It was just a family thing, and nobody would have suspected. So I went in there kind of probably carelessly, recklessly, just swimming. No big deal. I came back up. I think Juliet did as well. Then when I went back the following year, there was a sign that said, it was eerie when I read it. It said, there have been 150 deaths in the history of Dale Hollow. And I was like, what kind of a fucking sign is that to read as you're backing up your boat? Yeah, it said there have been 150 deaths in Dale Hollow Lake in the last 200 years, like that. And then at the bottom it said what they had in common, they weren't wearing a life vest. And after that, I threw on the life vest and worn it ever since. But this guy, Jeremy Wade, who hunts river monsters all over the world, I thought when the show started, I said, oh, well, he's going to do the whole series in the Amazon. And when he's done there, he's going to go to the continent of Africa and do season 2. And then he'll finish up season three in Australia, and then that should be the end of it. I'm not thinking Europe, the UK, America really has that, I guess. Hell was I wrong, man. He finds river monsters in, like, the state of Washington, in Alaska, in the Keys, and in Florida, and then, you know, different countries of the world that I would have never guessed. Argentina the other day. And these things, oh, my God, I can't believe there's so many there with these sharp teeth that just buzzsaw you. I mean, that the equivalent of just a human being attacking you with a chainsaw, and what they could do. I mean, they could probably just remove your arm. Same thing, sharks, crocs, different types of barracudas and piranhas and eels and jellyfish, and oh my gosh. And this guy is actually swimming with them, and the bull sharks, the stingray. I mean, he's down there just really, really ballsy. He's an English guy. He narrates it himself. But I think he does a really, really good job, honestly. And he goes all over the world. It's pretty cool. I think people like it.
Send him to Dan's Lake. Apparently, I don't even think Camp Crystal Lake had that many deaths in it. 150? Come on, man. What the hell's going on over there?
That sign was unnecessary in that regard. But then I guess in the end, it did what its job. It got me to put on the life jacket. You know what I mean? But
I've never worn one. I mean, I've never worn one in the water. What is it? It just lifts you, right?
It prevents you from sinking.
Yeah.
You could honestly probably just float, and you wouldn't go down. The thing just holds you up, basically, like kind of like an inner tube would. So, I get it when you're like jet skiing or doing the jet ski, because if you wipe out, let's say you bump your head, and you know you're not alert enough to swim. You pass out or whatever, basically this thing keeps you afloat. But it's a really calm lake. It's one of the cleanest lakes in America. There were no warnings for, like, snakes or crocs or nothing like that. But the fact that Jimmy Wade says, I'm in this river in Argentina, you know, where people used to swim until a river monster. You know, I'm like, well, hell, that means at any point, you know, a river monster could just pop up. And in most cases, it was somebody being a jerk and introducing a species of fish that then multiplies, and now that lake's fucked because of that person.
One of the best Frank Mir faces I've ever seen was from Derek Lewis when Nina handed him a life jacket. It was so small, dude. I probably could have maybe worn it, and he... He held it up like that and kind of looked there like, you think I'm going to put this on? Like, it would have taken, you would have had to sew together probably three of those for it to fit on Derek Lewis. But he gave her a really good Frank Mir face.
He doesn't say much, but his, when he does, it's funny. He keeps his sentences short, or his reactions or whatever short. And that's that. Hey, look, we're up against the clock here. Let me just blast through these. I think we did. In ourselves, guys, spending some time with them. We're going to unpack the card a little bit, but we can still do that. Michelle Pahea and Chaos Williams, you know, I was happy to watch them fight. They had some good moments, but I honestly thought this is KO, highlight KO city here. You know, like when the fight started, it was this. Here we go. Like someone's going to get their lights turned off. It didn't happen. They had some moments. They definitely can throw. They can both throw hard. I thought Chaos was going to win, but Michelle Pajeda got his hand raised. Here's a big one that needs to be talked about. Rob Font taking out Marlon Moraes in round one via TKO. Wow, man. That was big. And that was on the heels of Marcin Tybura taking out Greg Hardy. I thought Greg Hardy kind of quit. I'm sorry, but he wasn't in that position of being turned up because he had gotten jacked up. He just wound up there, and it seemed like there was no attempt to, like, just roll, grab a leg, do something. It looked like he just checked out a little too quick. That might be part of the growing stage or whatever, but I don't know. That I don't know. It seemed too early to me.
You know, we talked a little bit about that old guard. How about Anthony Pettis? He had kind of a performance that matched a little bit Jose Aldo. in the sense that he brought back some of the ways that he used to fight, and he looked really good as well. So this card, top to bottom, was it was pretty interesting to watch. And what was the third fight you brought up?
Font and Moraes.
Font is coming off of a major injury, so to see him perform that way, oh man, he looked really, really tough. And I think he's a tough out for anyone. I just don't know what to do with Marlon Moraes now, man. I don't know where he goes. And then Anthony Pettis, that was his last fight on his contract. So what happens now? Do they re-sign him? Do they
I mean, I'll tell you what. I would tell him, if I'm Anthony Pettis, see, man, this is where I know you let your agent do your job, but at some point, some of these guys have connected with the actual owner, all right? Like, I think Michael Irvin could probably walk into Jerry Jones's office and say, I demand this job, whatever. And Jones, remember, man, this dude was part of the turnaround of the Cowboys. He helped me win titles, blah, blah, blah. Or select any athlete that fits that mold, you know? I think Anthony Pettis could go, hey, do you remember when you kind of just threw me in Cowboy in there and I went in there and do you remember the Ferguson fight and WEC? And as long as he hasn't been difficult, man, I'm telling you, I think that's what Diego Sanchez did, goes. He went in there himself and said, I'm fucking Diego Sanchez, season one. You know what I mean? I've spilled a lot of blood. I can, you know, do you see me losing my train of thought or mispronouncing my kids' names or anything? As long as that checks out, I deserve to be in the UFC. That's where I want to stay. Let's figure this out, you and I. And hopefully they do. And I think Dana White will do that, man. Dana White has a lot of pros and cons about his personality or whatever. But one of them is that if you stare at him across the table, across the desk like a man and just put it all out there, he usually goes, all right, you know, let's do this. I think that's what Anthony Pettis should do. As far as Moraes, you know, 1 year ago goes, Moraes beat Aldo. And he was in a prime position. Now he's taken a loss, and Aldo is coming off a win. But Moraes won't fall too far off, you know, from where he's at, because he's got what's called a lot of skins on his wall, a lot of quality wins. So those wins will keep him relevant, which is kind of what happened with Jose Aldo, if you really think about it. But Marlon Moraes has a key win over Aljamain Sterling, Jose Aldo, Rafael Assunção, Jimmy Rivera, all top 10 guys. So even though he's lost to Font and Sandhagen, because Cejudo's gone, he's in that mix. It's something like we were saying about JDS recently. He's beaten Blagoy, Derek, and Stipe. And I think that's number one, number four, number like 11. You're in that mix. Now he's lost four in a row. That's a little tough. He's getting older, the KOs. But Moraes, man, he's still a player for sure. Here's the rest of the card. There was a lot of decisions, and that's why maybe this show didn't pop as well. I think there was like 8 decisions, but the rest of the card was like those that Pettis won. He beat Alex Morano. He lost round one. Credit to Alex Morano there, but Pettis got him in rounds 2 and 3. Pani Kanizad defeated Sejara Eubanks. Deron Wynn defeated Antonio Arroyo. Talia Santos defeated Jillian Robertson. Tafon Chukwi defeated Jamie Pickett. Jimmy Flick defeated Cody Durden. And Christoph Jagos defeated Carlton Minus. The bonuses went to Thompson, Font, Tabora, and Flick, $50,000 each. No fight of the night. All performance of the nights. Zero attendance, zero gate. Goes and I are going to get on out of here. Follow our guests on Twitter at BullyB170. He's got a real cool show on Thursdays with John Hennick's twin, Jason. It's called Remember the Show. Check it out. And he's really fun on fight day. He's very comedic, very funny, and he also gives you his fight picks on his Twitter page. So check it out. And then as far as Goz and I, we can be followed on Twitter and Instagram. He's at the Goz. I'm at MMA Junkie George. And our show here on Sportscaster is at MMA Junkie Radio. Thanks again to Sportscaster for letting us broadcast Mondays and Thursdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. And guess what? On Christmas Eve, the 24th, this Thursday, Goz and I will be here, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. We'll have a show for you. We'll have a guest for you as we guide you into the holiday. Some of you will already be off, or maybe you'll be driving. We'll be here. And with that, we're going to get on out of here. And if we miss you, have a Merry Christmas. Be safe. Stay sane. All that good stuff. And always be a champion.